It's been a long, hard winter for all of us in Iowa, non-human residents included. This hour, we'll take stock and talk about what our harshest winter in decades means for wildlife. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today, and it has been a long while since we've been this cold and this snowy for this long. We'll talk about the effects of this winter on wildlife and our environment, both positive and negative. And yes, there are some positives. It's also our spring membership drive. We're asking you to invest in the public radio station you depend on at 800-971-8815. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We had a statewide celebration of spring yesterday with our beautiful weather. And although winter probably isn't entirely done with us yet, we know we've made it through the worst of it. And this hour, we're going to take stock after a long, tough winter. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Charity. It's a pleasure to be here and to have made it through the winter.
Absolutely. Although, again, you're not missing out on the muddy season. You're right smack dab in the middle of it.
Yeah, I noticed that yesterday as I was tromping through my property to check on my bees to see how they had done through the winter. And boy, is it muddy. We lost, I think, over the last 2 days, probably, at least in central Iowa, I would guess over 90% of our snow cover. And so it was running off very quickly because we've got deep frost on the ground. It can't sink in very far. But the top 2 or 3 inches was pretty muddy, that's for sure.
Well, and of course, you mentioned losing snow cover really quickly. And central southern Iowa, almost bare. Northern Iowa, there's still a lot of snow left because the snow cover has been so deep there this winter. But we do have, of course, as we do every spring, all these swollen streams and rivers. There was an interesting phenomenon on the Iowa River yesterday of foam that was 12 inches tall as things were melting. And I read about that in the Cedar Rapids Gazette yesterday. And apparently that's a natural phenomenon.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean that there are all kinds of crazy chemicals in the water, but it certainly looked amazing.
Yes, it does. And the ice out on the streams has, at least in central and southern Iowa, has happened. Ice is going or is gone, and the streams are swollen. Many of them bank full. And last night, as I was traveling over towards Marshalltown, I saw a fellow, and it just made my heart sink. He was out spreading manure on very muddy fields that were running off very quickly, and I thought, where do you think that manure is going? You know, it's going to go right into the streams. So don't spread manure now. Not only is it compacting soil, but it is because of streams or the fields are way too muddy to be out there with machinery. But it's also that manure is just going to go right into our streams. So, criminy sakes, use a little sense here. let's not do that. I think most people know that, but just for the few listeners who might not, we'll put it out there. So,
all right. Well, one of the things that I have thoroughly enjoyed about this long winter, and my list of things that I've thoroughly enjoyed about this long winter is very short.
Is it?
It is. It's extremely short. But one of the things that I have enjoyed is that we've had the eagles on the Iowa River stick around much longer this winter. And, of course, at all those places on the rivers that remain open through the winter, there have been bald eagles collecting. But I also know that it's already nesting season for bald eagles, and I saw a couple on my way into work this morning. So why am I seeing bald eagles on the river, even though I know that there are eagles sitting on eggs right now?
Yeah, there are eagles. In fact, if anyone checks the Decora eagle cam, she's already got 3 eggs that she's sitting on, and I looked at it last night, and they have sort of a night vision camera on there, and so she was sleeping soundly on top of the eggs all night. And yes, so eagles are nesting already, but because of the lack of, until the ice has gone out, many of the eagles that are from farther north, that spend the winter here in balmy Iowa, where we have open streams below dams and around heating plants and that sort of thing, they were still here because while they would like to be farther north, really there's no opportunity for finding prey in streams up farther north. So they're sticking around. But I would guess if they haven't already, you did see some today, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, they will move out very quickly. In fact, those may be birds
gone
coming
tomorrow.
Up from farther south. Yeah, yeah, here today, gone tomorrow, and certainly will be leaving very soon to get up and nest.
Okay, so these are birds that could still be nesting. Because I was surprised. I thought, well, maybe if they're juveniles, they're not nesting. But I saw mature eagles on the
sure.
river today.
Yeah. Yeah, and perhaps they're not paired off yet, too. They may be just moving into adulthood and haven't quite established pair bonds that would move them north to a nesting ground. But, you know, they're going to be around for a few days. But I think we'll see them very quickly move on, and we'll have our so-called normal population of eagles that may be a pair here and a pair there, and somewhere around 300-plus nesting bald eagles in the state of Iowa. And every time I say that, it just gives me shivers.
Yeah.
Thinking that we would have that many ever is amazing to me, just amazing. So, yeah.
So on the subject of birds, you and I have talked about the fact that, for example, Canada geese often stick around all winter long. I don't know why they do that. It looks so cold. And we also have flocks of robins that stick around
right.
all winter long. And, of course, everybody in February starts getting excited that they're seeing the robins, even though they've been there.
They've been there. Right?
But this winter, I did, in our neighborhood, we had about a flock of 50 robins that we kept seeing repeatedly. But I also kept seeing a lot of dead robins. And I wonder, I mean, maybe that's just coincidence, but has this long, hard winter taken a toll on some of these species that aren't migrating as much anymore?
You know, it's really, really hard to tell. Certainly, they may have been more visible because of the snow cover, quite honestly, and easier to see things that have died.
Yeah. And the one that my puppy found, that was really visible.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, he's got a good nose on him. Huh?
Yeah, she's very precocious.
Right. But they've been around all winter, and we certainly do lose some over the winter, whether they're here or farther south, clear down into Alabama or wherever. It's natural for a certain percentage of them to die over the winter to a variety of causes, from some probably from exposure, certainly some to starvation, but also some to things that happen to them. They run into wires, they run into windows, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe there's a disease that takes them. That's why we try and measure survival in that first year when we're actually doing, population studies. We look at survival to age one, because that first year is so hazardous for young birds and things that are new to the environment. It's tough for them to adapt. And so that survival for that first year is often much lower than we ever imagine.
So let's talk about some of the other species that,
sure.
of course, had a long, hard winter here. Do you think that we saw some significant die-off of any species this winter?
Yeah, I'm sure that we have. And I think that the ones that have suffered most are those that are very habitat dependent. You know, lots of critters that overwinter here with us are pretty adaptable. They're generalists. They can change their food supply. Robins, for example, while they'll eat worms and other ground dwelling insects, during the summer season, in the wintertime, they obviously had to switch. They would have bent their beaks trying to get into the frozen ground, so they would have they had to switch their diets, and they switch largely to fruit. One of the reasons that robins are overwintering like they are is the abundance of winter fruit that's available on such things, believe it or not, as honeysuckle and European buckthorn. Those are two invasive species that of shrubs that we have abundant in many of our woodlands around the state, unfortunately. But it has given a winter food supply to things like robins that wouldn't have it otherwise. So it's not just, you know, global climate change that's causing this. It's also the availability of a food supply for them. So there are some things that, you know, are pretty generalist in nature. There are other things that habitat really has to be excellent. And while I have seen, you know, a few flocks of 10 to 20 or even 30 pheasants in some places, they're highly concentrated because the habitat destruction that's gone on over the last 2 years in particular, as a lot of CRP has been lost in the State Conservation Reserve Program land, and a lot of landowners have decided to put one more row of corn or a couple more rows of beans in, and they've destroyed the fence rows. And we've talked about before in the program how so many woodlots are now gone. A lot of farmsteads that used to be there are gone. Those were all called habitat for pheasants and quail and other birds. And I think that we'll see a significant, even more downturn than we've seen in the last couple of years. Whether or not the population recovers quickly depends a lot, certainly, on spring weather. And if we get a cold, wet spring like we've had, like we had for several years. Last year wasn't too terrible, but it wasn't great. We will not see a bounce back in those populations. So I think a lot of ground dwelling birds like that, we may see some significant loss. Heavy snows and certainly the ice we've had late in the winter. Ice is not good for anything. Plants, deers, turkey, squirrel, songbirds, pheasants, they all have difficulty finding food. And you may have noticed since we had that slush and subsequent cold weather, it formed about a 2-inch layer, at least here in central Iowa, that just, you know, it blocks off access to everything.
I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease today on Talk of Iowa, and you are welcome to join our conversation. You're talking about this long, tough winter that we've survived, just barely, and at least most of us have. And we'd love to hear your questions and your stories about this winter. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we do already have a question, Jim. This is from Greg. He says, we pay close attention to the ground squirrels in the pasture behind our house here in Story City. We're wondering how they might be coping with much deeper frost levels this year. Do they wake up and dig deeper? Do they have trouble with surface water from snow melting and flooding their bedrooms?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's where I wanted to start, was right at ground level. So the frost this year has been due to the onset of cold very early, and then a lack of snow cover for quite a while. And actually a lack of moisture actually contributes to this, too. We've had frost levels going down 2 to 3 feet over very much of the state. And the result is that for the human beings, we have lots of frozen water lines that weren't deep enough in the ground. We have septic tanks that aren't working in rural areas because their lines are frozen, or the tank itself is frozen. There's all kinds of things that are happening to humans. But for things like ground squirrels, and that includes ground squirrels and woodchucks, I suspect that we may see fewer of them this spring because they didn't go deep enough. No, they don't wake up and dig deeper. They are not able to do that. I think that this spring we'll have some that simply don't emerge from hibernation. They have to have their hibernaculum has to remain right around 32 degrees Fahrenheit, 0 degrees centigrade, in order for them to get through the winter. And if it goes below that, and I think in many places it has done that, they will not survive the winter. And it's also true for other things that spend time underground, and that includes things like snakes and turtles that are some turtles that particularly the more land-dwelling turtles, like the box turtles, they go underground, and because they're ectothermic, they take their temperature from their surroundings. They too have to have temperatures that are right above freezing or right around freezing, and if it goes much below that, they're not going to survive. So I think we'll see those winter hibernacula that have, some of them just weren't deep enough. And we'll lose some critters, and some of that is normal. So now I would say the low side, the bad side, the good side.
Well,
is...
Well, let's wait and get to the good side in just a few minutes. We
okay.
do need to take okay. A little break here, and we will get to your questions in just a minute, Jim. Before I let you go away, though, I want to uh-huh. ask you a question, because your involvement with Iowa Public Radio predates Iowa Public Radio, and your involvement with Talk of Iowa predates me, of course. How long have you been doing a Wildlife Day on Talk of Iowa?
Well, I think it's 25 years now, something like that. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your commitment to Iowa
you
Public
bet.
Radio. I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We will get back to our conversation about this long, hard winter in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here with wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and we are talking about this long, tough winter that we have made it through. And so, Jim, before the break, we were talking about some of the negatives. We're going to get to the positives of this long, tough winter. And, of course, we also want to include you in the conversation. So if you have questions or if you have observations you'd like to share, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So, Jim, there's a lot of snow. That's been a good thing in many ways, right?
Well, yeah, it has been a good thing. If you're a ground-dwelling mammal, a vole or a small mouse or even a mole to some extent, that stays active or semi-active through the winter, you like having snow. It provides that insulation that you need above you. In fact, as the snow disappears, people are probably calling their friends and family and any wildlife specialist, the extension wildlife specialist, Rebecca Christoffel, is probably getting lots of calls the last couple of days, I think, about seeing these tunnels on their lawns because the snow is gone now. And those are tunnels of primarily of voles, meadow voles in particular. They tend to be right on top of the ground, but that line their tunnels under the snow with grass from last year's thatch. So these are sort of like insulated tunnels. It's great, you know. And they are now exposed because the snow is disappearing very rapidly, at least in central and southern Iowa. And it is going to be an opportunity for hawks and owls in particular. The owls have been very, very busy around our place, probably picking up on that and getting at some of those voles. Those vole nests, I'll remind our listeners that don't worry, those things will go away as soon as you start mowing your lawn again. They'll have to retreat to other habitat areas, so it's not a serious damage. You may have a nest or two that you want to sprinkle a little grass seed on. Wait a little while before you do that, because they'll just consume it right now. But it's been a good year for them. Things like least weasels, it's probably been that occupy and feed on voles. Their time below the snow, they need that snow cover. They're a long, narrow critter. We've talked about it in previous programs about how body shape helps, it dissipates a lot of heat from the body of things like weasels. So they have to have ways of staying warm, and snow is one of those waves. Lots of birds, pheasants and quail, will dive into the snow. Again, that insulative value of the snow has been important. So it's not all bad by any means.
And now, of course, a lot of the snow as it melts will rush away to the Mississippi River in our creeks and our rivers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, of course, some of it will also stick around. And we've had some very, very dry years. Is this going to help a lot with our groundwater table?
Well, I sure hope so. So much of it is runoff because we've got such deep frosts. And I'm hopeful that it proceeds somewhat slowly. I don't like to see it all disappearing at once, because then it doesn't have any chance to soak into the ground and does just kind of run off. So I'm hopeful that, yes, those big piles that you see in some areas where you've pushed snow out of the way, or it's blown through your fence line and created this
glacier.
along the side of your driveway or your road. those will stick around for a while, and that's probably not all bad, because that will provide some groundwater for us.
All right. Well, let's get to the phone. Susan is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Susan.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. What's your question?
I'm kind of looking forward to spring.
you and the 3 million others.
I'm not alone there. I've got a lot of bunny rabbits, and I just love to see them grazing around in my backyard, but they have become really extremely voracious, and they have eaten even things like rosebush stems down to the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been one of those winters in which we will see, particularly as the snow dissipates, we will see damage that we haven't seen in quite a long time. When I give talks around the state, I often show a photo from, I don't even remember what year it was. It was probably the last time we had a very tough winter, where we had a lot of damage here on campus to trees and shrubs. And they were not just, you're right, they're not just chewing on things.
No,
that are
not easy things.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although roses are actually quite nutritious, and they will snip some of them in normal years, but to eat them right down to the ground level means that they're in trouble. What you want to look for is when they're eating things that are, say, larger than your index finger, okay?
Yeah.
Anything larger than that, if they're taking all the bark off it, if you've got a stem that's as big around as your wrist and they're taking the bark, that's starvation behavior.
Yeah.
And it doesn't surprise me this time of year, because we had that ice, and ice covered a lot of things that they might have been able to get to otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a tough year.
Help me figure out what I can do to keep them from doing this. Can I plant carrots in the spring or something? Would that make them happy?
Yeah, no. That would probably just increase their population. But what you want to do is protect your plants in the fall of the year, as you go into the year, as we go into winter. Put fencing around them, especially around the delicious things like roses. There are certain plants that they tend not to prefer, but they will eat them if it's starvation food, and that includes things like viburnums and dogwoods and that,
mm-hmm.
like that. But if you've got delicious plants out there, willows, anything in the rose family, lots of populous kinds of things like young cottonwoods and those sorts of things. They love those, and they're highly nutritious for them. Other things are not so nutritious for them.
Well,
so.
Can you put out feed for them, or is that that would only make them more?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's best not to feed them. It's just
not
best to try
them.
And protect your plants, and you need to do that in the fall of the year if you can, but you could even do that now if you want, and it would help those that have survived. It would help them to make sure that they make it to spring.
Do they? It seems that the population is increasing. Have they know? I live in Des Moines, in the city,
mm-hmm.
and do they have? They don't have any natural predators, do they?
Oh, there are lots of them around. Everything from cars to lawnmowers to dogs and cats to owls. Hawks, mink, all of those things will live in the city, even coyotes and foxes. So there are lots of predators around, and they may be increasing or appear to be increasing on your property, but really from year to year, the population doesn't vary a lot. In fact, I suspect that this year we will see a reduction in rabbit populations coming into spring versus last year, for example, because of the differences in the severity of the winter. So they may just be concentrated in your place because you planted lots of roses for them.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for your call. And you were talking earlier, Jim, about the pheasant population and how you think that there has been a lot of pressure on that population. Larry from Dallas County wants to know if suspending the pheasant hunting season for a year would help the population.
You know, I don't know that that would help it all that much, because pheasant hunters in Iowa haven't made that big a dent. And generally what hunting does is it removes what's called the huntable surplus of a population. That, in other words, there are fewer that are going to die over winter. What will help the population is if we had more habitat on the ground, quite simply, and if we had a decent spring. But it's habitat that is a solution to that problem. It's that simple.
Well, and yesterday, I don't know if you got to hear the show yesterday, Jim, but we were talking about how habitat in your own backyard can make a big difference for a lot of different species, especially insects and birds.
You bet.
For pheasants, I mean, we're really talking about people in rural areas, right?
Yeah, we're talking large bits of habitat. I think Todd Bogenschutz, who's a pheasant biologist with the Iowa DNR, he's given us a good visual picture, and we've talked about it on the program before, that how much just the loss of CRP, people going out of Conservation Reserve Program when they have the opportunity and putting the land back under tillage, growing corn and soybeans mostly. And he gave a good visual picture. He said, we've lost a strip of land 8 miles wide that stretches from the western side of Iowa to the eastern side of Iowa. That's how much, 8 miles wide, that strip of land is how much CRP we've lost in the state of Iowa. And that's really significant amount of habitat for birds and other things.
You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease about this long, tough winter that we all just made it through. And we were talking about rabbits just a few minutes ago, which, of course, brings to mind the fact that mating season has actually come and gone for a lot of critters. What do you think this cold spell will have as an impact on mating and also some of those early babies?
It's been real interesting to watch the squirrels around our place, and we have an abundance of squirrels. While they normally start chasing each other around, and they did this year too in early February, that has intensified a lot over the last few days. After the ice storm, the squirrels started, we didn't have any problems with them raiding the bird feeders prior to this because there were plenty of walnuts and other things around for them naturally. But as we got closer and closer to the end of winter and we had that ice cover, they couldn't get to those. And so they began accumulating around our bird feeders and providing new challenges for us. Boy, are they, the last 2 days I've been watching them, they are amazing how much chasing not so much eating anymore. They're chasing each other. They're breeding right now. So I think some of those early litters will actually be delayed a little bit. You know, and it brings to mind there are things that are triggered by photo period, in other words, the day length, and squirrel breeding or ability to breed is one of them. But those are often mitigated then, the timing of those, and we talked about phenology a couple of months ago on this program, the timing of those things is often mitigated by local weather conditions. And so you will have variation. And really, when you think of it from a species standpoint, that makes a lot of sense. You know, you've got to be able to adjust a little bit. If your species is so locked in, you may destroy the species, destroy yourselves by breeding at the wrong time of year. So while you may be ready to breed in a early February. Boy, the local temperatures and the weather situation is such that it's probably not a good idea, and that delays a little bit. That's okay. You're going to do better if you're a little bit more flexible as a species over time.
Yeah, the polar vortex was a, a subtle message. Maybe now isn't the moment to breed.
Right. And says, you know, this is it's really bloody cold out there.
You know, it is interesting because we've talked about this in the past with our warm early springs.
Right.
And so you feel that this has had a bigger effect because in the past you have said, well, it's mostly photo period. And
right.
even if it gets warm early, they're not going to breed extra early.
Right.
But,
yeah,
but again,
well,
the polar vortex, it was a communicator.
Yeah. Long-distance migrants, for example, birds that are coming from Central and South America, they're triggered by photo period, but it's mitigated. How far they come north is mitigated by local weather conditions. We do have, for example, when my wife, Cindy, and I went to Florida about 3 weeks ago for a little break in the winter, Iowa winter, we saw very large flocks of turkey vultures and red-winged blackbirds in northern Georgia and on our way down there. And we thought, oh, this is interesting. They're already here. And, of course, they would have moved back up. But now, just in the last few days, certainly red-winged blackbirds, killdeer are back already, taking advantage of the top inch or so of soil that's available to them. Red-winged blackbirds, the males are back. They're setting up territories. You'll see them on telephone poles and fence posts all along our highways now, and there'll be more and more coming. Certainly, sandhill cranes are back in central Nebraska. They will be going through that incredible migration over the next month. So if you have a chance to get out and see them, go and do that. But it's happening. Some things are more adjustable than others. But those long-distance migrants tend to be their migration north is mitigated somewhat, adjusted somewhat by the local weather conditions. There's no question. We have a lot of ducks and geese back as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's amazing. Just amazing.
All right. Let's go to the phones. John is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Yes, I'm just curious how the cold weather will affect the morel mushroom.
That's a great question. Yeah, I'm not at all certain that it will have any impact. Those spores that produce the mushrooms are pretty resistant to cold. They're accustomed to it. Whether it will increase the morel mushroom, I think, has more to do with how the spring proceeds. If we have a very dry spring, it'll be very tough on them. If we have a so-called normal spring, whatever that is, but with the decent rains that are spaced out, we should have a good and warm days, cool nights. We'll have some warm, not too hot. However, we should have a good mushroom season.
Right. So it's more about the spring than
right.
the winter.
Yeah, exactly. Now there are some things that we should look for that we won't have as many of, and I suspect that this year we may have, if the spring proceeds now. Well, because of the deep frost, I think we will have fewer soil, insect, and disease problems in crops and plants and garden sorts of things. That's because winter, when it comes to to those kinds of things, that deep frosts are our friend, and it's on our side. You think about trying to grow crops in a tropical area; those diseases, those insects, are present year round, and it's a whole other thing. So winter does, depress those populations, and tough winters like this one probably depress them a little bit more. So it'll be interesting to see if my prediction comes through or not.
All right. We'll see. We did talk about that with Donald Lewis last Friday on Hort Day, so he's not as optimistic about that. And no, it's not going to kill the emerald ash borer.
Oh, no. All no, right. That won't happen. No, I'm afraid of that. So,
all yeah, right. So. Gita is on the line next from Pella. Hi, Gita.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
I have a question about red-tailed hawk.
Mm-hmm.
He has been coming by here. Other people have identified him and sits on my bird feeder. Usually I don't have him face to face. About 2 weeks ago, he was facing me through the glass window. Spread his wing was hissing at me. Well, it scared me to death. But what's happening is I'm losing my birds.
Yeah.
When the snow melted yesterday, I went and there's a bunch of feathers down on the ground. Does he eat all my birds?
No, he didn't eat all of them, but certainly his presence has discouraged them from coming to your feeders. And this is probably either a sharp-shinned hawk or a Cooper's hawk, and it's quite normal for them as predators to take advantage of our bird feeders. We've had a sharp shin come through occasionally all winter long, and we're very excited to see him because he's a bird and we're bird feeders, so we're feeding him. But he usually is taking things that are a little slower flyers, things like starlings and house sparrows. It occasionally might take a cardinal. We have an abundance of them, so I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him grab a cardinal or something that we
shouldn't be feeling guilty as if she's entrapping these birds and putting them in danger. I mean, this happens at bushes and all over the place.
All over the place, exactly.
This is how it works.
Yeah, and it just happens that because they're at our feeders, birds are a little more concentrated. We don't want to see them taken, but it's a natural phenomenon. And his presence right near the feeders, you may have noticed, in fact, that when he's around, the birds kind of freeze. And they will. I've had birds freeze with seeds in their mouth, and they'll sit there for 5 or 10 minutes until he goes away, because they know that it's their movement that allows him to figure out where they are and capture them. So, but they're amazingly they miss about 9 times out of 10. so it's they're not perfect predators by any means. But he hasn't killed all your birds, but he certainly may have. If he's hanging around that close, he may be keeping them away temporarily.
Right. And as soon as he goes away, they'll come right back.
You bet.
Right?
You bet.
All right, Gita, thanks a lot for your call. And John is on the line in Waterloo. Hello, John.
Hey, good morning. I was wondering if you had observed in the past or this year, shortly after daylight saving starts, that there's more roadkill. I happened to be out early this morning and going when I was leaving at about 8 o'clock. Hmm. I mean, I went in at 6:30 and then I came and I went on at 8 o'clock, got out of my meeting and stuff, and I noticed some roadkill, and I got to thinking, I wonder if.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah.
Well, there's one species that dramatically changes its behavior because of daylight saving time, right?
Yeah. That's only us. But
right.
you pose an interesting question. You know, are there more cars on the road because we're going to work at a different time and coming home at a different time, and therefore the adjustment that species have made? I doubt it, but it's a very interesting question. I hadn't thought about it that way before, because the change into daylight savings time certainly coincides with spring activity levels. For example, a lot of people have mentioned the smell of skunks available in the last a few days, especially. And skunks are out now breeding and moving around a lot more, setting up more territories. And skunk smell is quite readily on a lot of roadsides. And so I'm not sure if it's the change in our habits or if it's the fact that it coincides with changes in their habits. That's a very interesting question. I don't know the answer.
Well, and we just have a couple seconds left, so I'm going to steal Tom from Dubuque's question and just ask you, one of the interesting things about this winter, in addition to all the snow and the cold, is that we've been putting a lot of road salt down on our roads. Will that affect wildlife and our habitat?
Yeah, it certainly affects, temporarily at least, affects so the plant's ability to grow on our roadsides. We talked about that last month, the importance of roadside habitat. But I think it may also impact things in our streams. Depending on the amount of water, how much it gets diluted, you know, fish have already had a tough time this winter with very thick ice. But I don't think it'll have long-term effects as long as it gets diluted enough.
All right. Well, Jim Pease, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Wildlife biologist Jim Pease. He's also an environmental, interpretive, and wildlife consultant in the Ames area and an emeritus associate professor of natural resource ecology and management at Iowa State University. And he joins us once a month to talk about wildlife and wild places in Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa.